When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 12 of World Cup 2018 is done. Brian Strauss and I will be talking about that as part of our podcast coming to you daily from Russia through July 16th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by Pete Hoppins, the Senior Design Director for Nike Football Apparel, to talk about Nike's wildly popular design of Nigeria's World Cup kits. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss, who is back in Moscow after a few days in Nizhny, and you're in your hotel. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm sweaty. Like, that was just an incredible, that was 2 hours of punches in the stomach watching those two games, or one game at a time, flipping back and forth and losing your mind. That was insane. So I'm kind of running around like an idiot right now.
I mean, just a fascinating evening with very late dramatics, simultaneous games, obviously, in the group finales. Group B tonight had Morocco against Spain and Iran against Portugal. Simultaneous VAR calls, very determinant calls, late in this game, made things absolutely insane. In Iran against Portugal, you had a VAR call that gave Iran a penalty, which was converted. Iran equalized at one at the exact same time as VAR gave Spain a goal, deservedly, and made it 2-2 in their game against Morocco. And then Iran had a chance to eliminate Portugal and put the ball in the side netting, which is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. I saw the goal by Aspas for Spain, which was sensational.
Yeah.
What a goal. I once scored a goal like that in a game really early on, and the other team got annoyed and beat my team 7-1. So, but he did it at the end, and that was awesome. And then I missed the Iran penalty entirely, but then I saw them hit the side netting, and then I had an aneurysm. It was incredible. It was incredible. And look, there have been a lot of press conferences. You know, Didier Deschamps today, Gareth Southgate when I was in Nizhny, talking about positioning in the group and who you're going to meet in the second round, and we're not going to worry. We're going to, you know, all the permutations. And Didier Deschamps saying today strongly that he wants to finish first in the group. He wants to beat Denmark. He's not worried about the round of 16 matchup, et cetera, et cetera. But this mattered. Spain gets Russia now, and Portugal has to play Uruguay. Those are two very, very different opponents. And then in the next stage, the winner of the Portugal-Uruguay game, probably, you know, France is in that side of the bracket, whereas
right.
on the other side, it's a bit lighter. So it mattered where you finished here, and it was just incredibly dramatic and nonsensical.
Well, for the most of the game, I was actually most disappointed with Spain because they were struggling against Morocco, ended up going down 2-1 in the game, and were really in a position before the VAR craziness where Spain was going to finish second in the group. And you were kind of like, what are you doing? And I was saying that to Spain throughout the game. I mean, from the start, you had Gerard Piqué come in on a two-footed tackle where he might have gotten a red card, didn't. You had Sergio Ramos, the other revered center back for Spain, both of their center backs having poor performances tonight. Ramos having a misplay on the ball with Andres Iniesta that set Morocco free on their first goal, and then Ramos beaten for the header on Morocco's second goal. And it's so funny to me. I mean, like, yes, in the end, it's kind of what we expected, Spain in first, Portugal in second. But the way we got there was absolutely not what we expected. And you have to give a ton of credit to Iran for putting themselves in a position to advance, and they just didn't.
And just think if Ronaldo gets that red card, right?
Yeah.
Where we are now. I mean, there are no good teams in this tournament, essentially. That's what it's come down to. Every team is flawed. Even the ones that are 2-0 have either played, you know, junior high teams or are teams like France, for example, that just doesn't look convincing. Spain has struggled. Brazil has struggled. It's mayhem. It's complete mayhem. I feel like 2/3 of the goals in this tournament have been scored in stoppage time. I don't know how else to say it. I'm running out of synonyms.
Here's my thought is Croatia and Mexico are the two best teams we've seen so far.
That may be true. Yeah, Mexico. That may be true. That may be true in terms of 90-minute performances and against good opposition. That actually might be the case. In which case, like I knew when Evgeny Kuznetsov scored in Pittsburgh that like the sports polarity reversed and like the world would never be the same. And here we are with Mexico being the best team in the World Cup.
I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But here's Mexico, which still has not clinched a berth in the knockout rounds, has to get a result against Sweden to do so, and Croatia, which has been amazing, goes tomorrow night against Iceland, a team that I think can beat Croatia and give itself a chance to advance along with Croatia. So lots of craziness in this tournament, and I'm really liking it.
Do you have any, since you did the Mo Salah piece, do you have any sort of thoughts on his kind of very melancholy World Cup, the three losses? Didn't even look like he wanted to celebrate his goal today, the controversy about his dalliance with the Chechen leader. I mean, do you sort of, it's very sad. To me, the excitement that we all had for him and for Egypt a few weeks ago, like it just could not have gone worse, you know? So it's kind of a letdown on that front.
It's a pretty big bummer. My main hope for Mo Salah is that he can come into next season with Liverpool and basically continue where he left off, that it's not something where we're talking about, oh, he had a really big bummer of a World Cup and that's going to carry over now to Liverpool, because he's been such a great story with Liverpool. And, you know, ever since the injury in the Champions League final, it's just been a stretch of bad luck for him. And really the Egyptian FA has not done right by him at all. You know, there's no way they should have been located in Chechnya in the first place. That was a political deal.
Oh, God, the unprofessional from top to bottom mishandling of that entire situation, letting him leave his hotel and, like, you know, go on a field trip with a warlord. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Who does this? No, it's absolutely crazy. And I thought about maybe we should do power rankings, good and bad for FAs, because I think the Egyptian FA and the Argentinian FA would be right at the top of worst federations in the world.
Right. I mean, Argentina is an absolute mid meltdown, too. And I'll be at France, Denmark tomorrow and here in Moscow. So I'll cover that game. And then, like, while I'm writing that story, essentially, I'm going to not be writing it because it's going to be the two Group D deciders going out simultaneously, which is going to be insane. I wonder how they'll do it in the media center. I wonder if they'll. It was really like there's no picture in picture here. And another thing for listeners at home, all of the highlights and stuff that are being tweeted out by Fox and then retweeted by us at SI and everybody else, that's all blocked here. So it's actually hard to get World Cup highlights if you're not tech savvy and sort of left to Russian television, obviously no DVR. So, you know, scrambling, looking for replays and highlights and things like that. And it'll be interesting. And obviously no picture in picture or whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that tomorrow. I don't know. I understand the competitive. I know about the disgrace of Gijón. I know the story. Look it up if you're not familiar with it, from the 1982 World Cup. I understand why they play these games at the same time. I'm sure there's going to be hijinks come 2026 when two teams in the groups of three, when the two teams in the last game can kind of mess around a bit. But it's just too much to handle. Like, I don't know what the right answer is, but it's too much for me.
This is one of my favorite things are the simultaneous group finales. I just did my video essay for tonight about that and how disappointed I am that they're set to go away with expansion to 48 teams in 2026.
Well, you're essentially on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. You're probably watching both games from 10 angles at the same time.
Yes, I am at the Fox.
I'm watching watching on a 1950s Soviet television.
Well, I understand that situation. It's pretty great, actually. We have two giant TVs in the Fox Sports Lounge here that are showing both games simultaneously. So we were actually watching both tonight and going crazy. And I'll be very sad if that goes away in 2026. I think FIFA still has time to find a better group format that allows for 14 groups, I hope. We'll see.
A couple more things that caught my eye today. Spain's uniforms, so delicious, with the black socks, so good. Quaresma's goal, which just gets lost in all the insanity, but they're very similar to Cherishev's goal in the opener, that outside of the boot curler, the kind of shot that, you know, you get yelled at for trying at basically any level of soccer in the world, except for, like, if you're one of these dudes and they can pull it off. I think there was this amazing scene, you know, right, like Sergio Ramos just had a nightmare of a day, and there was this amazing scene where he kicked the ball, he took a shot, and it went, you know, 40 yards into the stands, and I guess you can keep the ball now at a World Cup?
Can you?
Like baseball? And so the ball goes into the stands, and this guy catches it, and his friend is just like, I'm going to try to rip this out of your hand. And they start fighting for it, and it's on camera. And the dude's trying to rip the ball out of his friend's hand, and then they realize they're on camera, and they stop fighting and wave and cheer at the camera. And it was amazing. People love being, like, I'm the only person on planet who hates being on camera. Everybody else friggin' loves it. What a day, man. Like, just breathless stuff, and obviously, you know, Uruguay taking care of business against Russia, no surprise. Uruguay's not even been, I mean, you can't even say they've been tested. I mean, there's never been an easier group in the history of the World Cup than this one. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle Portugal, which is the definition of sort of a rugged and tournament-tested team. So, place your bets now for the odds of that game not ending 11-11. More to come, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Next up is my interview with Pete Hoppins about Nigeria's World Cup kits. Our guest today is somebody you might not have heard of before, but he's had a big impact on the kits at this World Cup, including Nigeria's, which has gotten so much attention and is maybe the most popular World Cup kit we've seen in many, many years. Pete Hoppins is the Senior Design Director for Nike Football Apparel, and he's joining me today from Oregon. Thanks for joining me, Pete.
Hi, Grant. How are you?
Doing well. Really enjoying the World Cup here in Russia, and appreciate you getting up early over there for this recording. But I wanted to talk to you about, in particular, this Nike Nigeria kit, which has really gotten currency, not just in the soccer world, but even in the fashion community. And there's so much demand around the world for it. And I wanted to say congratulations for starters, but also get a sense from you about how this kit came together.
Yeah, thanks, Grant. This has been, I think it's kind of taken us all by surprise, the popularity of this jersey. But it started about 2 years ago, the design process. So if you think about it now, you know, as the World Cup's going on, we're actually in the middle of designing Eurochamps 2020. So that's how far out we're designing. It kind of started with a small group of the design team wanting to do something different outside of our usual kind of constraints that we kind of put on ourselves. And we were looking for a team really that we could take some risk with. Mm-hmm. And really kind of change the aesthetic and kind of cultural reference points for football. And we kind of ended up choosing Nigeria to do that with.
Okay. And I would assume that certain countries that you work with are definitely more traditional, and you really can't do as much in terms of taking risks or experimenting. But Nigeria is not one of them, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was exactly why we kind of chose Nigeria. The England kit, it has to be white. The Brazil kit has to be yellow. So you have these restraints that are kind of long lasting traditions. And there's different federations who we work with, and different clubs are more susceptible to change and to try new things. We kind of landed on Nigeria as the team that we wanted to really push the boundaries on.
Okay. And how did the idea process work? I'm fascinated by just the creative process and the stages of it. How long did it take for this to come together?
So it's about a 2-year process. Mm-hmm. In terms of from initial kind of concept or like idea and story to actually the players wearing it on pitch. And then before that, probably maybe about a year before that, we look at like innovation. So in terms of new fabrications, new yarns, making the lightest weight, most breathable jersey possible. So that process starts probably about 3 years out from every World Cup. Mm-hmm. And then as we get closer to the time, we start to build the concepts and the ideas and the stories for each of the teams playing at the World Cup. And then from there, we have a series of check-ins, like design reviews, on the actual like uniform designs and the collections that we're building.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll be straight with you, like this design, not just of the jersey that we've seen out there, but also a lot of the other aspects of this Nigeria kit, including the warm-up tops and all of it, basically. I suggest any listener who hasn't seen it yet, if you've been on the dark side of the moon, check it out. But like, it felt to me like a Fela Kuti song is the first thing that came to mind. And I was wondering, like, when you're coming up with that, is that something that you're even thinking of?
Well, I think so. With Nigeria, what we actually did is we dived super deep into the culture of Nigeria, and it started off with a lot of the young players who are playing for Nigeria, a lot of them are playing in the Premiership, mm-hmm. but they're all connected through music and fashion, and there's this kind of like movement that's happening in Nigeria called Niger, which is like the youth of Nigeria, like the new Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of connected with what's happening in London with the music scene there. And all these things are kind of all interconnected. And we kind of went around this like rabbit hole of inspiration and design and found out about this whole amazing culture that's happening. And that is what we wanted to kind of bring to life. And it wasn't just on the jersey. We wanted to kind of put it onto the full collection. Mm-hmm. So this is really the first time that we've really dug super deep and then kind of tried to encapsulate that vibe, the Niger spirit, through a full collection. And then it was about getting it in front of some of these players and kind of cultural influencers. And then I think, you know, as soon as we started showing the designs and the product to the players, we knew we were kind of onto something.
Interesting. So were there any particular Nigeria players or cultural figures that really, I guess, were part of this process and responded well to you about what you were doing?
Yeah, Alex Iwobi and Ian Acho, mm-hmm. two young guys playing in the Premier League, I think kind of started from them really, in terms of like a muse, and it really, really just spread, you know. And then we've started to see this crossover between London and Lagos with the likes of Skepta, who's a huge influential grime music, it's like English rap in the UK. You know, and then there's this another guy called Starboy.
Okay.
Also known as WizKid. He's a huge musician in Nigeria, and then he has this crossover with London, and so it's all starting to kind of come together and bubble up. And I think what you're kind of seeing is almost this shift into football becoming a lifestyle, similar to what we saw with kind of like basketball in the late 80s and early 90s, mm-hmm. similar to skateboarding becoming a lifestyle in the late, you know, mid to late 90s. I think what you're seeing right now is football really having its moment, and that sharp point or this tipping point is really this whole Nigeria collection at this World Cup and how that is kind of informing this new kind of cultural explosion of through football.
Do you have an idea so far of sales figures around the world?
I have no idea. I leave that to the sales guys.
Okay. Fair enough.
I know there's lots of rumors flying around, but I have no idea.
In terms of the Federation of Nigeria, did you have to do any persuading at all of them to sell them on this, on approving it?
Actually, one of our designers, a guy called Daniel Farron, who's been one of the lead guys on this project. He's actually in Russia right now, going to the Nigeria game. So he went over to London. We had a meeting with the president of the federation, and usually it's when we do these. We do these meetings, it's mostly the federation, it'll be the president and his like associates. Mm-hmm. But this time we actually managed to pull in some of the younger players. Hmm. There's a video going around on YouTube. You can go and check it out. If you type in Nigerian president reacts to Nigeria collection, it's out there. And I don't know who put it out there. You can see the reaction of the players and the president. And one of the reasons why we brought the players in was because we wanted a younger a view and reaction to the kit and the collection, mm-hmm. to kind of help kind of persuade the president. But you know what? The president, hats off to him. He was fully on and engaged and excited about it from the get-go. So. No, that made a massive difference.
And were there any sort of historical aspects or like a particular Nigeria uniform from the past that this design was sort of alluding to, taking a nod to?
Yeah, the 1994 Nigeria jersey, mm-hmm. was the starting point or the reference point. It kind of has these... like almost like eagle wings, mm-hmm. on the sleeves. And so we wanted to replicate that energy, but bring it into a more modern aesthetic. And, you know, if you look at all the Nike kits as a whole, like if you look at Croatia or the England away or, you know, training jersey, you know, there's a shared kind of like aesthetic or language, mm-hmm. that runs across all the jerseys. It's just how you interpret that language, mm-hmm. Through that federation. So those eagle wings that we were referencing, you know, the Nigeria team are called the Super Eagles. Mm-hmm. It's an eagle on their crest. So we created a kind of modern, like a faster looking version of that eagle wing. And then that was the kind of inspiration for the print that you can see on the home jersey.
Okay. And it's not so much the case now, but I do remember previous World Cups, maybe 2006, 2002 to an extent, where there was more of a cookie cutter sense about some of the national team kits, where there was a similar design at times for multiple countries. And I'm wondering, clearly that's not the case these days, and I'm wondering how much more time it takes to do such an individualized design process.
Yeah, I think the templating, I think you would call it, of football kits is something that's been we've been doing, or the industry's been doing since probably since football kit design started in the 1970s. There's a great documentary. I think it's based on Admiral, who were like the very first sportswear kind of licensed branded jersey manufacturers. So you should go, you know, you and your listeners, you should check it out. It's absolutely fascinating. Mm. But that was very much a copy cutter template approach, but then using color and graphics to kind of tell individual stories for the teams or the clubs. So it is a lot of it is to do with manufacturing. Mm-hmm. and how it becomes really complicated to make individual kits for every single team. Because if you think about how many different versions of a kit there are, I think Barcelona, I think we have like 55 different versions of the actual jersey. So you have the players, what the players wear, then you have like the fan version, and then you have, you know, women's, kids, little kids, babies, you have like all these different versions of the same kit. So then if you multiply that by whatever, however many teams Nike has, you know, it's in the hundreds, you know, it starts to get out of hand. How many jerseys actually have to be made and manufactured and kept to like the highest standard possible. So that's kind of one of the reasons why you see a lot more templating. Mm-hmm. But there are kind of ways, ways around it of like how to create more individuality, but still have a similar chassis or template. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we work on. We work specifically on for this World Cup. There's a shared innovation fabric. There's a shared aesthetic to how the jerseys are cut. Mm-hmm. But then it's really through, you know, color and graphics and storytelling that we can make them like more individual. Mm-hmm.
I guess I would just wrap it up by asking you, with the success, the raging success of this Nigeria kit and collection, do you think that might cause other federations you work with to be, in the future, more willing to take risks, and maybe even some federations that have always been seen as, you know, quote-unquote traditional?
Oh, yeah, we're already seeing that. So we're working on 2020, Eurochamps 2020, and then the club season, the European club season for 2020-21. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the briefs that are coming in are we want a bit of Niger, you know, we want some of that energy. So that's really exciting for us. And you know, that was definitely like the intention, was to kind of try and get federations and clubs to get on board with something that's more youthful and more energetic and take more risks. Because, you know, if we're asking consumers to go and buy a new jersey every season, then it needs to be more different from the last one. Otherwise, they're not going to go and buy it. So for us, it's like trying to bring excitement to the players, but also to the fans as well.
I love that quote. We want a bit of Niger. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Pete Hoppins, Senior Design Director for Nike Football Apparel, for joining me, and congratulations.
Thank you, Grant. Enjoy the World Cup.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss and Pete Hoppins, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Unlock big savings while adding style and security to your home with Schlage door locks from Menards. High-quality Schlage Wi-Fi compatible entry locks allow you to lock and unlock your home from anywhere with your phone. Get peace of mind and save big money on all door locks at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money.